this will be explained in a second, but the topic of my talk is whether it's possible to feel breathless. Do we have a clicker?
Just a little clicker?
In this case, I'll stand here. Is that okay? Okay. So does this work? Okay. So my main project involves experiences of absence. So in this context, I was thinking about whether it's actually possible to experience absence in breathing. So just to give you a couple of examples, the experience of absence I've been focusing on involve perception. So for example, in this case, you see that a finger is missing, right? And I've been considering how these experiences occur in visual modality, but also I've been also interested in emotions of absence. So this is Mother Teresa, and in her diary, she writes that she frequently feels absence of God in the world, and she feels grief and loneliness when thinking about the absence of God in silence. So these are just the topics of my research, and a part of my research involves actually looking at cool pictures of absences. So when I watch movies, I usually look for pictures of absences, whether it's Avengers or something old and esoteric like old Hitchcock. So here there's this husband who is angry because somebody was visiting the house, there was a coat, and now it's missing, and now he's about to I guess, talk to his wife and ask her what's going on with this missing person. So there's this absence, and one of my prized possessions actually is this picture from Bergman's Silence, which is a film about two sisters. One is this really emotional, sensuous person called Anna, and this is Esther, who is suffering from some kind of disease. We don't know what the disease is, but at the end of the film, she has this spasmodic suffocation. And what was really interesting about this frame for me, or just watching this part of film, was that I was actually feeling lack of breath when I was watching it. Even when I look at the picture, I feel like I can't breathe. So I was wondering about what's going on there. And just talking to Javi, I started to think about, well, okay, so we experience absences in lots of modalities, like vision and audition and so on. So what about breathing? Can we experience absences in breathing? All right, so that's the question. So she seems to be clearly experiencing an absence because she can't inhale. So is this actually something we can attribute to breathing, an experience of absence? So here's kind of the dialectic that I was thinking through. We often feel breathless. That seems to be a given, right? Just accept that. Feeling breathless involves feeling a lack, and that's core, feeling a lack of something. So something is missing, and you feel this lack. So it's possible to suppose that we often experience absences in breathing, that just follows. But question, big question for me, is it actually possible to feel breathless? And I'm going to argue that the answer isn't as obvious as it might initially seem. Actually, certain cases of feeling breathless actually do not involve experience of absence, so we need to think about how to characterize them. There are cases, they're actually not cases of feeling breathless, they're cases of something else. Right. So let me begin by characterizing experience of absence. So feeling breathless involves feeling a lack or experiencing an absence. Let's just suppose that. What are experiences of absence in general? Right. So I'm going to characterize these experiences. Here's one example of a gymnast. The head is actually there, but it's tilted, and so you feel like it's actually ripped off or gone. It's not Photoshop, it's real. It's a real photograph, and photographers get a lot of money for these kinds of pictures. All right, so here's an experience of absence. Something seems missing, and this is a visual experience, right? You see the absence of the head. All right, well, here's another example from Hangover, where the guy, after a rough night, goes to a mirror and sees that his tooth is missing. Again, something looks missing. More examples. Your partner, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband, wife, promises you to leave you a piece of cake when you come home. It's your favorite dessert. You come home, and look at what you see. It's absent, and you feel really angry. And then, a final example from art, suppose you love Damien Hirst, whom I hate, but suppose you love him, and you see this is your favorite sculpture, or this art object, rather, and you see it for the first time, and you're really excited, and then you come see it again, and look how beautiful it looks, but then third day you come, and something's gone, and you're wondering, what happened? Is it theft? What's going on? So you have an experience of absence. So what's in common in these kinds of experiences, and this is core for my argument, is that they involve recognition or an impression that something is lacking or missing. You have a positive recognition that something is missing. It's not just that something is missing, you actually recognize it to be missing. Okay, so these are experiences of absence. And I've been mainly focusing on intermediate level perceptual experiences, where it's obvious to you that something is missing, and it seems to be a case of perception as opposed to some kind of intellectual inference or reasoning. Right, so here you immediately see that a finger is missing. All right, here's another example where a part of a horse is missing. Now, which cases are more problematic? So this case, you might think that it's perception of absence of a dot, but scientists might argue that there is no immediate perception of absence of the dot. You just see empty space. You see some kind of a pattern with an empty space, and then when you look more at the region, then you infer that something is missing. So the first immediate low-level visual reaction isn't actually pop out of absence, but it's just empty space. All right, so there are these low-level cases, and then there's really high-level cases, which is, so this is, I don't know if any of you have been to Germany, this is Bibliothek Memorial in Germany, supposed to signify the burning of the books by the Nazis, and this is an empty library. So until I've told you, you probably didn't see any absence, you probably don't even know what this is, it just looks like a bunch of white things, but now you can see, you can kind of understand or interpret this as a bunch of shelves with missing objects, specifically books. So notice how this case is very different from a case where a finger is missing. There you have an immediate sensory impression of absence. Here you have to think about it. I'm not even sure if you are experiencing an absence. At least in your experience, maybe you're thinking about one, but it may not be given to you in your perceptual experience. So these are high-level cases and low-level cases. So I'm focusing more on the cases where it's something, where it's immediately given to you, where the absence is immediately given to you. So other modalities. So, oops. Not sure what happened here. Looked okay on my computer. So in other modalities, you can also experience absences. In sound, if a child suddenly stops crying in a restaurant, you can hear the absence of sound. It's really pleasing silence, really pleasing absence. Missing wallet, when we go like this, or missing keys, you can just feel the absence by if you frequently keep your keys in your wallet or your wallet in your pants, you can feel the absence by touching. Missing step. Proprioception, so when you go downstairs, you can feel the missing step. Lack of sweat, so you can see if your deodorant is working, you can smell your armpits and feel the absence of, smell the absence of sweat. Okay, and so what about breathing, right? So this is the topic, what about breathing? So it seems like absences can be felt, experienced in all modalities, right? I've listed. There's also smell, or taste. But what about breathing? Can't we feel absences in breathing? I mean, it seems like we should be able to, because isn't feeling breathless just a case of feeling absence? All right. So the reaction might be, sure, why not? Have you had these wonderful cases? We often feel breathless, and feeling breathless is just a form of experiencing an absence, experiencing that something is lacking. Mm-hmm. Right? Seems very straightforward. So here's why it's not straightforward. Before I'm going to actually talk about why it's not straightforward, let me just give you some examples of feeling absence in breathing. So happy gasps, when somebody tells you, oh, look how beautiful this is, you can gasp, you can momentarily lack breath. Hyperventilation, like Hadi already mentioned, involving panic, anxiety, or when you're jogging, when you're choking. Purposefully holding one's breath, and for example, meditation, again, involved in experience of breathlessness. And then feeling ecstatic, various forms of religious experience, orgasm, altered states of consciousness, involve reduced activity in the frontal cortex due to hyperventilation, right? So in these cases, we might think, well, this is just a variety of cases of feeling breathless, and feeling breathless is just a way of experiencing an absence or lack. So here's our taxonomy, if you wish. Let's just assume that we can feel breathless. Okay, so why is it problematic to say that we can't feel breathless? To see why it's problematic, I need to actually unpack more what it means to feel breathless. So what is in common with all those cases of feeling breathless? And this is a really nice sculpture, I think in Pittsburgh, that I really like, but I'll explain the meaning later. It's actually going to be helpful. So I want to go back to Esther's case, who feels breathless because she can't inhale anymore. Something is she's suffocating, she can't inhale, so she literally lacks, she can't breathe at all. So this is one case where we can say it's a complete form of breathlessness, where you can't hang at all, there is no oxygen, and therefore you feel a lack of everything that's typically associated with breathing. It's just completely cut off. It's total breathlessness. Let's just call it that. So Esther's case. And another case called take from Godard's movie Breathless, where there's this criminal, Michel, who's running around, he's hyperventilating because police is after him. And so he's feeling breathless, not in the sense that Esther is feeling breathless, he's feeling breathless because he's hyperventilating, right? His breathing is still happening. So here are the two cases of feeling breathless, right? And you can see if other cases I've mentioned actually fall under these two, if we had more time, but we'll just stick with these. So are they actually experiences of absence? So we call them feeling breathless, right? We can call them feeling breathless. Are they experiences of absence? Do we have an impression that something is missing? So Esther's case seems to be very straightforwardly a case of perception of absence, right? She can't breathe at all, she's suffocating, she can't inhale, so she feels the absence, she lacks. Sounds awkward grammatically, lacks breath, but that's what it is. And then the second case, maybe you could argue, isn't really a straightforward case of perception of absence because, look, he's still breathing, right? It's just rapid and unsatisfying. So what exactly is missing? It seems like everything's okay. It's just happening fast. Okay, first pass, right? So it seems like the first case is a much more straightforward case of absence perception when everything's cut off than the second case. Okay, so let's challenge these two judgments of these cases. So Michelle's case, is there really no experience of absence? Well, I'm thinking that you're already coming up with objections why there is still a case of feeling breathless. Well, breathing is still happening, it's rapid and satisfying, but something is missing. What is felt is lacking oxygen, right? So breathing isn't really all about feeling how your chest is moving and inhaling and exhaling. It's feeling that it's satisfying in some way, it's nourishing you, right? So Michel isn't nourished when he's running around, he feels lack of oxygen. And so we can term this case as a case of perception of absence because even though breathing is happening, it isn't satisfying. So to feel lack of breathing can be understood as false. So in this case, breathlessness can be understood as an experience of absence even when breathing does occur. So we just need to be clear about what exactly is felt as lacking. What in breathing is felt as lacking? So when we call a case of feeling breathless, we need to be clear about what is felt as missing. Is it that the chest isn't, is it that bodily emotions are absent, or is it just the sense of satisfaction that your body is doing its job, however badly, but you are lacking oxygen despite that. So that's the relevant lack that's felt in this case. That's the lesson. But, so there's just kind of the sense of nourishment that breathing gives us. And if it's missing, like the chi represents nourishment or oxygen, if it's missing, we can ascribe, we can characterize this case as a case of perception of absence. Okay. Sorry, I'm not sure what this is doing here. So Esther's case. How can we challenge Esther's case? So Esther, I remember, feels complete absence of oxygen. She just can't inhale at all. She's just suffocating. Something's not happening. I'm not sure. The film doesn't tell us, but she's just not doing well at all. Okay, so is this an experience of absence? It might seem like it is. She can't breathe at all, so she feels lack of everything that's necessary for breathing, right? However, here's a really interesting, that's kind of my recent discovery about breathlessness, is that I think the phenomenology is actually a phenomenology of presence as opposed to be a phenomenology of absence. So what's present in the experience when she starts to suffocate? So I think that what's actually phenomenologically there for her is if you hold your breath for a second, what you will actually feel, and I've practiced this, you will start feeling your heartbeat, you will start feeling pressure on your chest, and you will start feeling other sounds in the room, for example. So just practice that when you're alone. So what's really interesting about this experience of absence is that it isn't actually an experience of absence. When breathing stops, other things become much more present to you. So the phenomenology of absence actually is absent here. It's a phenomenology of presence. Let me give you an example just to illustrate this point. So if you look at this, I think it's Warhol's artwork. If you look at this display, you will see that there is a missing banana in that slide, right? You could just see, okay, banana, 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 and then it's gone there. But what is your phenomenology like? What is salient to you in this experience? It's possible that when you look at the red square, what's really present to you isn't that the banana isn't there, but it's a beautiful, vibrant red square. So it's a phenomenology of presence. You can see the square as an experience that gives you a certain object positively. It isn't really about an absence. It's about what's there. It's about the presence. So I think in certain cases of breathlessness, what's really interesting is that they're not really, you're not feeling that something is missing. You're feeling the presence of something else. And that's what overwhelms and saturates your experience. All right. So I think the two lessons, just to summarize, from the first case, we need to be clear about cases of hyperventilation. When we feel breathless, what is felt as missing or lacking? And what's missing is oxygen or nourishment of your body, right? So breathing ultimately isn't just about body emotions. Breathing is about nourishing you. And when you feel breathless, you feel the lack of nourishment. In the second case, you might think it's a clear case of an experience of absence, but it actually isn't, but because the phenomenology is that of presence. If you hold your breath, you will feel other parts of your, other processes in your body much more prominently, much more vividly. So there is no phenomenology of absence. Nothing seems to be missing. Things seem to be present. I'd like to conclude by the final section. Is it actually possible to feel breathless? So the big puzzle here, and this just goes back to my overall fascination with experience of absence, is how can we experience in perception something that isn't there? So for vision, it might seem to be deeply problematic. You might think, well, why not just say that in vision, we don't really see absences, we just infer that something is absent on the basis of what we see. So maybe in vision, it's much more intellectual. But it seems less plausible as a model for breathing, because breathlessness seems such a bodily experience, it's such a sensory experience, so it doesn't seem to be like an intellectual activity at all. So it seems like it's possible to feel breathless, and I've just given a taxonomy of what it's like and clarified some things there about phenomenology. But how is it that we feel breathless? What is the correct model? So if we wanted the science of feeling the absence of something in breathing, how do we do that? So let me just give you a picture of how I go about it in the visual modality. So suppose, again, you come home and your evil partner stole your cake, ate your cake, and it's not there. And you have this vivid impression of absence. You feel really upset, and it's just lacking from the plate. But if you focus on the qualities of your visual experience, you will notice that all those qualities are actually positive. What you actually see are positive features of this object. So you see the glistening white plate, you see the crumbs, you see the fork. So where is the absence? How do you locate the absence in the experience of presence? So that's the big challenge. And I think absences, the best way to explain how we perceive absences is to treat them as kinds of contrarieties or oppositions between what is there and what's imagined. Okay, so let me just kind of work it out for this picture. So how do you perceive this absence? Scientists would call this a process, or we ordinarily would also think of this process as involving a visual search. So when we search for something, when we expect something, we visualize or imagine the missing object, and then we project it onto the locations where it's likely to be, in this case, the plate. When we register a mismatch between the imagined object and what's there, we perceive the absence. So according to my model, absences involve these mismatches or contrasts between imagined objects that are expected to be there and what is actually there. So for vision, for this case, you imagine the cake, you project it onto the plate, and you register a mismatch or a contrast, and that's the experience of absence. So in this case as well, you expect the ball to be in the middle, you see it in the middle, confirmed expectation, violation of expectation, the ball is absent. You imagine the ball, you project it onto that location, and you experience an absence through the mismatch. So it works really beautifully for the visual modality. It also works for other modalities in which we can form templates of objects and mismatch them. Does it work for breathing, however? So for breathing, we will need to find evidence, some kind of evidence that this process can actually happen in breathing. Do we form templates in breathing? Where those templates lie? Do we match them and mismatch them? How do we find evidence for that? But more problematically, how would a template for the presence of oxygen look like? Like, if breathing, it doesn't just involve expecting your body to move in a certain way, but expecting oxygenation at a certain level, how can a template encode that information? These are just open questions, but here's just a bigger worry or question. Is this a right approach to breathing? So maybe the mismatch model, the templates, imagination, projection, and mismatching works nicely for visual modality, maybe for auditory modality, but maybe it's just a bad approach to breathing. And here's just the final word that I'm going to end here. So mismatch model applies to vision are the modalities that are object-centered. Those modalities are about locating objects in the visual field, where objects are these bounded units that are located in space. But breathing isn't really an object at all, right? We're not, when we perceive breathing, we're not locating objects in our breathing stream. Breathing is a process. It's a cyclic process. So it's a cyclic event. Ultimately, it's an event, right? So the best model of perception of absence in breathing will involve understanding lack of breathing as a kind of event that happened, not as an object that needs to be located. So here's the... is it blinking? So here's how we see disappearances in the visual modality. It's a case of absence perception involves perception of an event, an offset, where you see something and then you lose visual contact with the object. Right? So ultimately, you observe an event or an offset. So in the visual modality, we have these cases of perception of absence where you probably don't do any kind of matching and mismatching, but we just register an offset, and that's enough to register an absence. You can stipulate that in breathing, feeling breathless similarly involves registration, I guess, or detection of a stimulus offset. So when your breath is suddenly cut off, when you gasp, what it ultimately involves isn't some kind of template that's projected a mismatch, but just registering an offset or an end to a stream of sensation typically associated with breathing. So I think maybe that's the best approach to perception of absence in breathing. So let me just summarize what I've said. So the first supposition, feeling breathless involves feeling a lack of something or perception of absence. Is it possible to feel breathless? So we looked at two forms, no inhale cases with Esther, who couldn't breathe at all, couldn't inhale at all, and then hyperventilation cases where you are breathing, you aren't inhaling, but something important is missing, specifically lack of oxygen or being nutrition. And then the lesson was about the most obvious cases, no inhale cases, is they mainly involve an experience of presence and an experience of absence. So something else in your body becomes vividly present to you, takes up your attention. And then the final point was that perhaps the best model of detecting an absence in breathing isn't about imagination and mismatched templates, but about detecting an offset, detecting an event that happens. So I'll stop here. Thank you.
This was very inspiring, and so many thoughts came out of it. But I mean, the whole question of absence, of course, is connected so deeply to the question of breathing and question of air, in a sense that
yes.
Empty room is a lack of all the objects, but it's full of air. So in a sense, then it is connected to this that what do we understand by lack or absence? Because of course also this missing finger or the missing tooth, the only way we see them is that kind of air comes in with this invisibility, and that air's invisibility is that lackness that we see. And it, at the same time, when there is the air's invisibility, which we can't see, there is more room for us to breathe. The less there is objects, the more there is a room to breathe. That's why, for example, in the sea, when there is no object, it's just a vast sea, we feel our breath so much differently. So perhaps, actually, breath and breathing is a way to study absence. The absence of air.
In vision, okay.
Yeah, like this, what we normally understand as absence. And for example, in the religious and mystical traditions, the breathing practices are that which brings you to nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, there is so much stuff.
Thanks for that. So I think I think that's a really interesting suggestion. I think it's true of lots of cases where the more room you have, the better breathing is. The more absence, the more presence in breathing. But I think also it might be slightly restrictive of our recent development with technology. So we are now evolving to function or efficiently exist in spaces that are hugely overwhelming. So where there is a lot of sensory input, and this is becoming the norm of our life. In addition, there's a lot of informational input through the devices that we have. So it's possible that we'll actually adapt even our breathing to function well in those kinds of spaces. So we can have, like, now as humanity we face two trajectories. One, we can go back towards sparser life, more, you know, minimalist life, and where you can actually breathe and feel like a human being, or we can adapt to more cluttered environments, and our breathing will similarly, I think, adapt.
Of course, we need
yes.
to do both.
So that's another possibility.
Okay, is there another brief question?
I wonder whether you've blurred the distinction between process and identity,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that breathlessness is a process, but you've talked about it in terms of states of identity, I believe. One example of it's kind of the implication. I once got something stuck in my throat which required a Heimlich maneuver, Uh-huh. And I was intensely aware of that process having stopped, mm-hmm. and that the implication was I had no future.
Yes.
And I imagine that people on the airline that crashed, was crashed into a mountain, those people were intensely aware that they were about to die because it was a long, slow flight. Mm-hmm. The pilot who organized it that mm-hmm. way. So they knew, and he knew, at that moment of his suicide was going to be their death. So they would have had that prospect of cessation in front of them. So, but as I say, the point is, I felt the crossover that you were talking about a process, but you're actually talking about identity quite a lot of the time.
I would like to hear more about what you mean by identity, but I think it was an important part of the talk, the final part, which was really quick, I admit, that breathing isn't really an object that we feel the absence of. It's not like seeing the missing cup. It's feeling the absence of a certain process. And then the question is, how do you detect a lack of the process? So one answer is through the offset. Just like in visual modality, you see an object, then it's gone, and there is loss of visual contact. Here you have loss of contact with the process that was ongoing, and that's how you perceive the absence of that process. So the analogy back to visual modality would be, if you're on a train and you think it's about to move, but you feel the absence of motion, you're not feeling the absence of an object, you're feeling the absence of a process that ought to be happening. And in case of breathing, breathing is a process that ought to be happening. You feel its absence. The question is, what's the best model? The mismatch model involving imagination, or an offset model which doesn't involve any kind of imagination or imagery at all. It's just this primitive sensory registration of offset. That was the summary of philosophy.
Okay, thanks very much, Anya. So hopefully you won't be experiencing an absence when we go outside. Coffee, 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 tea is a view, so thank you very much to you.